Hello and welcome back to The Bunker. I'm Andrew Harrison. Live gigs, who remembers them? As lockdown lengthens, Glastonbury gets cancelled again, and live music shows get pushed further and further back, those of us who love a noisy night out are feeling ever more bereft. But behind COVID is a far worse and far more serious threat to Britain's live music industry, the catastrophic effects of the botched, ill-thought-out and careless Brexit deal that the government rushed through in December. A touring industry that could once take musicians, techs, engineers, instruments and equipment around the EU without any barriers now has to get work permits and paperwork for equipment for every individual country they visit. It is a recipe for the end of a multi-billion pound industry that punches way above Britain's weight around the world. And Phish, the multi-million selling singer formerly of prog rock band Marillion and now a successful solo artist, put it all very succinctly in a social media post at the weekend, how Brexit has destroyed UK artists' ability to tour in the EU. He's here today to talk about it. Hello Phish, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Bit cold today, dealing with the usual lockdown scenario. So yeah. I'd be quite amazed. That, I mean, to be honest, since I put that post up on Friday, I'm amazed at how many people have actually, how many people it's reached nowadays. And, you know, and the comments that have come back to me have been quite moving and very illuminating as well. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people are coming together just to try and source information and find ways forward. It's difficult.
Jacob Rees-Mogg says, British Phish are now much happier. How's Scottish Phish? Not very happy about it, by the sound of things.
Yeah, Scottish Phish aren't very happy at this moment in time because I mean, I'm dealing with double whammy. It's not just the touring. I mean, I've been an independent artist since 1993. And through the years, I've kind of refined a way of working and a model to be able to continue my career. I mean, you know, I'm a realist. Those Marillion days are long gone, and thanks to streaming and piracy and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I'm very aware of the change in the industry. I mean, for example, I mean, I had something like 450,000 full album streams on the Welchmats album, but you know, I've only sold about 14,000-15,000 albums, but they're all sold direct to fan. It's all a mail order business. So now we're dealing with the whole VAT issue and the postage issue and sending items out into the EU on top of losing all the touring. I mean, like I said, I mean, the twin pillars of my career are basically, you know, my source income from live and my source income from mail order, and now we're getting, there's so many more regulations being thrown at us on the mail order side, it's driving me nuts. I mean, I spend most of my day just going down rabbit holes on websites trying to get answers, which I can't find.
So I'm going to share this post in the show notes for this so people can click on it and read it in full because it's really detailed and it's really good. But for people who haven't read it yet, just set it out. How exactly is Brexit destroying this industry, which it is?
One of the main problems we've got is the visas. From what I've learned so far, we're now in a situation where we've gone from basically getting on a ferry at Dover and having a passport check and being able to tour all around Europe to now we're going to have to check at every border. We're only allowed there for 90 days out of 180, which means they have to check how long you've been in the country, which means that we're in a situation where we're going to have to get our passport stamped at every border crossing to prove where we are, what we're doing, how long we've been in a particular country. But the visas things, although they're not, by definition, like really work visas, you've got to apply for a permit. And the problem is that from what I've found, for example, in Holland, you have to get this permit and the processing fees are £250 a person. That £250 a person, I mean, I've got 10 guys in my band and crew, including myself, you know, and it's basically, you know, five other musicians, and all I've got is one backline tech, one out front sound engineer, a guy who deals with lights and back screen projections, and my production manager. And so, you know, there you're looking at £2,500 a country. And if that applies to my next tour, I've got £15,000 in visas, money to pay for these visa stroke permits, right? And I'm going to have to find that 2 months to 3 months before I've even played sang a note, you know what I mean? Before we've even done a gig. And we've got to deal with declaring all merchandise if we decide to take merchandise across the EU. All that VAT has got to be paid in advance before it even gets on the dock side. But, I mean, the visa thing, getting stopped at every border is going to be hard. But, again, we go back to carnies. And a carnie is a document that's provided by the UK government. And on that carnie is a list of every piece of equipment that is on that truck or in that trailer that goes out of the country. And the idea of the carnie is to show that you're carrying that equipment and you take it out. You're not selling any of that equipment when you're abroad and you bring all that equipment back. So it has to be stamped at every border. right? And if a customs officer decides to check the carny, then you have to unload that truck or trailer in the middle of the night or whenever and go through every item have it ticked off to have it stamped. All that puts pressure on drivers because all the drivers are working on restricted driving time. There's very tight rules on drivers being in charge of vehicles, you know, not necessarily even driving, and the rest stops and all the rest of it. So when you're dealing with unknown factors like borders and whether or not you get your truck emptied and you've got a gig to do that night because, you know, you're normally playing five shows in a week. So the whole bureaucracy is going to confound us all, you know.
The carny and the checking of lorries, these were sort of horror stories that senior musicians would tell to the young ones, weren't they, about the time you would have your stuff stripped down every time you crossed into Italy or Germany. For certain markets, you'll only really want to play one show in a country. If it's a small country, a small European country, or just, you know, your fan base is such that, you know, a show in the capital makes sense or did make sense. And now that's off the table, really, isn't it? Because it's going to cost as much to get the work permits for a single show in a country as a place where you're playing 10 dates or 15 dates.
That's exactly it. I mean, for example, on the last European tour, big European tour we did in, 2018, we didn't actually use a UK bus because it was becoming expensive to run UK buses. So what we did was we flew the band in. We all flew into Brussels Airport and the equipment came in on a carny through Dover on the back of a truck that was loaded on a trailer on the Nightliner. But that Brussels gig, we had a gig in Verviers. It's a small gig. It's a well-known club gig. It's about 600, 800 capacity, and it's like a filler gig. And it was the gig that we did before we got to the airport. And it was like the only gig we did in Belgium. And we can't do that now because looking at what seems to be the new regulations, we're going to be paying £2,500 to play in Belgium, right, for one show. And an 800 capacity gig is not going to support £2,500 worth of visa fees. I mean, my standard guarantee when I'm playing, you know, most of the shows, the basic guarantee was in 18 was about €6,000, right?
Right.
And that covers the Nightliner, it covers my band wages. That doesn't have anything to do with me. I don't make any money off that. That's just basic costs. Yeah. And now you're looking at, you know, a promoter's guarantee is 6,000. 50% of that's going to be in lost in the visas. So, I mean, you can forget playing that single gig in Belgium. You can, you know, normally in Paris we play the Divan du Monde. Again, it's about an 800, 900 capacity venue. And it's just, it's like a token play. You know, it's like, yeah, we've been into Paris. We play at the fans there. It's great. That, again, that gig's under question. In Spain, Madrid and Barcelona, again, we're playing club gigs down there. And, you know, there's a doubt over there. Germany, Holland. I mean, Holland, I'm playing 2,000 a night. Germany's about 1,000, 1,500 a night. So, you know, you're able to kind of wash it. Again, it's just all added expense. Even though you've got the cost of the visa there, it's all the administration, the VAT registrations that we now have to do in every individual country, right? So that if we want to sell merchandise, we've got to register for VAT in a country. I mean, all that, it just keeps on adding up and creating more and more problems and more expense, which ultimately has got to go down to a ticket, right?
An established band with, you know, with fans across Europe and a decades long career, in a sense you have advantages that are not there for new bands. What's this going to mean for new bands trying to establish themselves around Europe?
It's going to kill them. When Marillion went out in 1983 for the first time into Europe, we were only playing about 300 a night or something, and that was with a major record company behind us. And that's the thing, it's like, you know, when you're going out and back in the early days when you sign a major label, you get tour support, which comes off your earnings is taken from your royalties.
Yeah, just so listeners don't fully understand that, the record company would pay you money to enable you to tour.
They would loan you money.
Against your future earnings. Yeah, yes, true.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, when we were touring in Europe in the early days, we got tour support from EMI. The way it works is that EMI would pay you the tour support because they want to break you into, you know, and I think this should be pointed out, that Europe is the third biggest record-selling market in the world, next to USA and Japan. And Japan's not entirely relevant because a lot of it's a domestic market in Japan. But, you know, for English-speaking artists, America and Europe are the two big ones. And, you know, it's 30 minutes in a ferry and you're across one of the biggest music markets in the world. That's why record companies are willing to advance money and provide tour support. But if you're an independent, and these days, people are not buying physical product and the income from streaming is negligible. It's difficult for an independent to qualify, laying out £2,500 in every country to play clubs. So, I mean, for young bands, it's a killer. I mean, where the future musicians of this country are, where the future tax generators in the next 10, 15 years are going to come from, I don't know.
Why do you think the government has been so kind of cavalier and uncaring about this huge sector, which on paper should be the archetypal global Britain industry? You know, it, like, we punch above our weight, we reach every country in the world, we dominate rock and pop and dance music, and yet, you know, it's just like, as a footnote, yeah, okay, we'll write off the world's third biggest market for live music. Why have they been so cavalier?
I've got no idea. I mean, they've just ignored culture, full stop. I mean, you know, they forget that. I mean, Bob Geldof, I saw an interview with him in Sky, which I thought was pretty cool. And, you know, and he pointed out something that, you know, I forgot about, is that we taught English to most of Europe. I mean, most of the Europeans, most of the people in Europe learned English through lyrics to rock and pop songs. And I've got no idea why the government is taking it. I mean, I think maybe they forgot about it. I mean, I was trying to prepare, you know, for the last year and a half, and I was asking professional advisors who were schooled in the world of Brexit, and they had no idea, and nobody had any idea really what was happening until the 31st of December, and it's just been foisted on us, and it's like, okay, deal with this. And people forget that tours are booked a year in advance. I mean, my tour last year was deliberately put in place so that I would avoid all the complications of the post-Brexit scenario, and now I'm in the Brexit scenario. It's very, very ugly. I voted to remain. You know, my wife's German. I've got strong ties with Europe personally. My daughter is half German. I'm not a mourner. I mean, I accepted it. Okay, there's a democratic vote. I accepted it. I'm trying to deal with it now. And it's, you know, a lot of the stuff that's being shown up as part of the withdrawal agreement is not being thought out properly. It's just been all slapdash. And they're trying to deal with it now. I mean, I know that on, I think it's February the 8th, there's a debate in the House of Commons regarding this entire visa fiasco. All I've got to hope is that, you know, the common sense is going to prevail, and that they're going to come up with a solution to find either some sort of visa that allows us to go to tour the whole of Europe. I mean, again, as I pointed out in my post, I mean, the tax situation. When I go out and play in Germany, there's 19% of my earnings are taken in basically income tax, you know, foreign tax, arts tax. And up till now, I got a bit of paper showing that I'd paid that amount of money on the previous tour. I think it was about 30-odd grand, you know, in tax, that I come back and I show a bit of paper to HMRC, and that goes against the tax that I pay here. Now, I don't know if that's going to work now. So I could be in a situation where, you know, that 30-odd grand of tax I have to pay in Germany, and then I come back, and the bit of paper, you know, I might only get a percentage of it. I don't know. And we've got to budget tours. We've got to put tours together that make financial sense. And it's hard enough at the moment, but without having all these question marks and so many issues that have got to do with organising tours. And there are a lot of production managers, tour managers, band managers out there that are tearing their hair out at this moment in time, trying to work out how to set up tours. And as I said, I mean, I've got a September tour that's in the book that I'm contracted to do. And even with the visas, I mean, I could be looking at having to apply for visas and pay for visas 2 to 3 months before I go on a tour that I don't even know is going to happen because lockdowns and COVID and everything else.
And you don't know how long those visas are going to be valid anyway. You may, yep. If it gets rescheduled, you may need to redo it all over again.
Exactly. I don't spend my days stamping my feet about COVID. I just accept it and, you know, and I grit my teeth and I deal with it. But I mean, you know, but even on my mail order service, I sell everything from the studio in Haddington. I don't deal with Amazon because of the percentages they take and also the VAT issues with Amazon. I mean, I sell from here. And, you know, even Royal Mail, I spent a week trying to get my account supervisor, a week trying to find information about how does an album go from Scotland to Germany, for example, right? What happens at the other end? And they said they don't know, all right? And this is Royal Mail, who own GLS, the basically German version of Royal Mail. And my Royal Mail guy said to me, can you ask your fans how they get the packages and what happens at their end, right? That's how bad it is.
The world of music was very reticent to stand against Brexit before the referendum. I mean, I know of bands who were very pro-EU membership privately who didn't want to speak out for fear of alienating their fans.
Yeah.
Was that a mistake? Should music have been louder about this and said, look, this is going to happen to the culture that we export around the world, but also to the bands and the creative, the wider creative world. It's not just music, it's theatre, it's comedy, it's film, it's dance and so on, to the culture that we as British people love.
Nobody knew that this was going to happen. I mean, you can plan for this. Nobody knew until the 31st of December what the final settlement was going to be. A lot of people in the music business, a lot of Remainers just thought, well, you know, this isn't going to happen. And maybe they should have been more vociferous, but they've just been seen as fearmongers because nobody knew what was going to happen. It's only now that we realise just exactly what it all means. No? I'm Scottish. I live up here. I mean, I voted Remain. 62% of Scotland voted to stay in the EU, and we're still out. No?
Which brings me to my next question. Do you think this is going to be among the things that take Scotland out of the Union?
I think it's going to play a major factor in it. I've got my own personal feelings on it. And like I said, I'm Scottish and I want to live here. I don't like the circumstances I'm having to deal with. And there are ways that we can perhaps change it up here. I don't know. I think a lot of people just didn't believe it was going to be a leave situation. And as I said, it was very difficult for a lot of Remainers to stand up at the time and go, well, if this happens, then this is going to happen. You know, if you vote leave, this is going to happen. Because we didn't know. It was easy to decry anybody that was turned around and said, well, this is going to happen with visas and this is going to happen with VAT. Nobody knew. In July, it's all going to change again. In July, they're talking about trying to bring a one-stop VAT thing together for the whole of Europe. Why didn't they do that? Why didn't they have that in place before so that when it came to the 31st of December, we could have just fallen into it? Rather than, well, this is how it's going to be, because the government didn't know what was going to happen.
It's almost as if the government doesn't know what they're doing.
No, I don't think they do. I think they wanted it all sorted out by the 31st. They just wanted it stamped and dealt with the 31st, and it's like, okay, we'll deal with all the rest. Once it's signed off, and then we'll sort all the detail out after. But the detail is important.
Yeah,
that detail is throwing question marks on future touring. I mean, you know, I was supposed to be retiring in 2022. That was my plan. And that's gone out the window. I've just lost the whole of 2020. And, you know, and it looks like I'm going to lose the whole of 2021. So I'm not going to be on the road till 2022 if I can find a venue, because there's so many bands that have rescheduled gigs from 21 and 20, and they're all moved into 22. And on top of all that, you have the COVID situation where, you know, there are so many people out there that have lost their jobs that don't have income. And you might have five bands coming to your city that you might want to see every one of those five bands, but you might not even be able to afford one. And that means that there's going to be a lot of people getting financially hurt out there that are on tour, because people just genuinely don't have the money to buy tickets to go to venues. And you're dealing with, I mean, for my audience, I mean, my core audience is kind of between 45 and 55, which is one of the age groups that is probably more reluctant than any of the other ones to actually go back to crowded venues. So you're dealing with the psychological impact, you're dealing with the financial impact, and now we're dealing with the bureaucratic impact as well.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mess, but we're going to keep an eye on it and we'll keep the listeners up to date. Fish, thanks so much for joining us. I mean, fingers crossed something can be sorted. In the interim, what is the best thing that listeners can do to support the bands that they love during this miserable time? I mean, I've been buying stuff off Bandcamp and trying to buy music direct from artists, as you've just described. Are there other things people can do?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would say. So if you're a fan of a band, buy it direct from the band. Buy it direct from the band's website. Just search out. And, you know, it might cost you a couple of quid more, but you're supporting musicians. You're supporting musicians who support crew. I mean, it's a huge industry, and it's been an industry that's given so much to the UK, both in culture and to the government in revenues. It's in danger. It's in serious danger. And that's what I would say is, if anybody is a fan of a band, search out the band and buy a T-shirt or buy something off them. It's anything that helps. I mean, because as I said, I mean, there is going to be no live revenue for quite a long time. I'm always looking for, you know, silver clouds. Last year, you know, yes, I lost the touring, but the thing was that people didn't have the, you know, they weren't spending money on going out to restaurants. And a lot of people rediscovered my music. And I think as well, I mean, I do every Friday, I do a broadcast on Facebook, and it's called Fishing Friday. And I've done it every Friday since about March the 17th or 20th last year. And it's a tour show, and I play music, and I talk, and I talk about all sorts of stuff. Some is music, some non-music related, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that has kept me in contact with my fan base and a lot of fans. And it's introduced me to a lot of people. And it's those people that have been buying my merchandise over the year that's kept me going through this. And that was my silver lining from last year. It was like, yeah, I was finding something positive to move forward on. But this year, you know, even that has taken a heavy shot. And, you know, and I've just got to keep on looking for the next silver lining. That's all I've got to do.
There's a lot of it about. Well, Fish, thanks for joining us. A new album, Weltschmerz, is out now. I mean, calling your album Weltschmerz right now is like us calling our podcast The Bunker. It's like we basically called the misery into existence by mistake ourselves.
They will burn me at the stake.
It's all our fault. We did it between us.
Bringing out an album called Weltschmerz, with world pain in the middle of a COVID.
Suspiciously European title as well. Fish, thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition. Remember to subscribe, listeners. And if you back us on Patreon, you get every edition a day early and without adverts. Beat that. We're going to put the link to Fish's post on in the show notes and on the Facebook as well, so you can have a read. It is a really good read. And we will see you again soon. Thanks for listening.
The Bunker Daily was produced and presented by Andrew Harrison. The assistant producers were Jacob Archbold and Yelena Sofronievich. Audio production was by me, Alex Rees. Theme tune by Kenny Dickinson. The Bunker Daily is a Podmasters production.